NamNab is a podcast that deals with the grisly details of a variety of topics, including true crime cases, government cover-ups, conspiracies, and the paranormal. This content is not suitable for everyone. Viewer discretion is advised.
She was murdered.
We're on.
Sup, my dudes?
Welcome back.
This is not a monster, not a boogeyman.
I'm Naomi.
I'm Janae.
I'm Les.
And this week, I have a little bit of a different case for y'all. Since we're all still in quarantine, we are recording remotely as per usual now.
So please be kind to us.
Yeah, we're trying. We're trying really hard. But I am actually bringing you, surprisingly, not a murder case.
Ooh.
Interesting.
A little bit different for us.
Not murder.
So this one, I do still have a little bit of trigger warnings. There is some suicidal ideation involved and self-harm, but nothing too graphic or too violent. So... with that being said, I am going to tell you about England's most violent prisoner.
Yay! Ooh,
interesting. I love violent prisoner stories.
Yeah. And this one's like, it's weird because you'll see a little bit later on, he's not like your stereotypical prisoner. He's just a little bit of an oddball all around.
Cool. I'm ready.
So... Michael Gordon Peterson was born December 6, 1952 in Lutton, Bedfordshire, near England. He was born to Joe and Ira Peterson, and he was one of three boys. His family had a strong political ties, with his father running a conservative club, and both his aunt and uncle each serving as mayor for the town in the 1960s and 1970s. But his family is like really well known. They're really well respected within the town. So... this all kind of comes as a surprise later on. Growing up, Michael was described as being incredibly gentle, kind, and would even protect other children from bullies. He loved school, was popular, and polite to everyone. However, the family moved towns when he was a teenager, and Michael started getting into trouble. He began to miss school and loved getting into fights. By the age of 13, he was in a gang comprised of four robbers and would eventually be sent to juvenile court when he was caught stealing, but was only reprimanded.
So he had just like a gang of robber friends? That sounds awesome.
Yeah, he just had a little gang of robber friends that he hung out with. So the law would continue to be kind to Michael for his teenage years, and the family felt that he had just fallen in with the wrong crowd, and that there was nothing else in his childhood that would explain his sudden change in behavior. So like, there was nothing... like no abuse, there was nothing that really could lead them to believe that this would happen to their kid.
Huh.
He just fell in with the wrong crowd, apparently.
Weird.
So during his teen years, he returned back to his hometown in Lytton for work, and he had his first job at Tesco, which is just British Walmart for people who don't know. It only lasted 2 weeks before he was fired for attacking his manager. I don't know.
How did he attack his manager?
I think he just like had a disagreement with him and didn't agree with something that he was told to do or like someone's opinion. So he just like physically assaulted him. And was like, fuck you.
All right. He's angry.
He's an angry boy. Because he's still a teenager during all this. He went through many jobs at factories or at manual labor positions. He even had a few more extreme jobs, including growing a handlebar mustache and becoming a strong man at a circus.
That's fucking awesome.
Oh my god.
He's like your stereotypical...
steak really, and egg.
Yeah. He had like this really like big, muscular, buff dude look. And just a handlebar mustache to go with it. He was like your stereotypical image of a strong man.
Like those gymnasts and Family Guy that Les was just talking about.
Yeah.
Exactly. Or Coraline.
Yes.
Oh my God. Yeah. That's me and my body dysmorphia.
Yep. That shape in particular. So he would continue getting in brawls when he was out, and his next run-in with the law would not be until he damaged property. Specifically, I think this was when he got into a fight with his then-girlfriend's father. And it says that he just went around, like, beating the shit out of a bunch of cars and just broke them. And they were like, okay, no, you can't be doing that.
So he was, like, hulking things around? It's crazy.
Pretty much. That's mainly what he did. But he then, he like, all he got from destroying a bunch of property was he was released on probation. He got a fine. So that's
interesting.
He just got a slap on the wrist. But then he stole a semi-truck, crashed it into a car, and attempted to evade police by running 90 miles to his parents' home and was later arrested at the home. So he got there. He ran the whole way. He ran.
Man is like a mutant. That's not a man.
He is. We have the missing exit.
He's like superhuman criminal. He's running wild. Someone take him down.
Dude, I don't even think I could run 1 mile, let alone 90.
Yeah, no. Jesus. I don't know what the fuck he is.
Is he on PCP or something? Good lord.
I don't know.
What time frame is this? I think I missed it.
So, since the driver of the car he had hit survived, Michael was once again only faced with probation and fines instead of manslaughter.
What?
So, because even though he stole a semi, hit this other car, because the driver was completely fine, they were like, yeah, let's just give you probation and some fees. Nothing else. No time in jail, because he didn't kill the person.
Oh my Jesus. God.
Apparently you can run around England and fuck up everybody's stuff and they still won't put you in jail.
Apparently.
Just punching people in the face randomly.
Yeah.
That's
stealing semi trucks.
He's like, I don't like you. Just decks him right in the fucking face. So at the age of 19, this is all before he was 19, he was put on trial for his part in a smash and grab raid, but the judge wanted to give him another chance and gave him a suspended sentence. That same year, he would later meet a girl named Irene Kelsey, who would later tell how different he was, since he always wore a tailored suit, was perfectly groomed, and he just had this really beautiful accent that she really liked. They got married around 8 months later, and she was 4 months pregnant at this point. So they had a son named Michael Jonathan Peterson, but Michael had a drinking problem and would disappear for days, returning home covered in bruises, but would sober up in a few hours and play with his son like nothing was wrong.
Like the other Michael. I thought you were like the baby. Like, no. Oh my God.
Sorry, they named them the exact same. Yeah, Father Michael had a drinking problem. This infant just going around
Father Michael.
Hammered.
Michael Sr.
Michael Sr. So he acted like nothing was wrong until 1974 when he disappeared for a full week. Police raided his and Irene's home and informed her that Michael was convicted of armed robbery at the age of 22. He was sentenced to 7 years in prison, and that would be the beginning of his stints in and out of prison, continuing to this day. So, continuing on from this point, almost everything will be about his time in prison and the increasingly wild shit he gets into.
Oh my God.
I also thought you were talking about the baby when.
Sorry.
It just appears for days on end.
Yeah.
The baby's a raging alcoholic.
The baby's just going on bitches. So, shortly after arriving, he was sent to the punishment block for attacking two prisoners unprovoked and was later transferred to prisons. He had a reputation as a short-tempered prisoner, and he refused to do any prison work and even destroyed a workshop after getting into an argument with a prison guard. This added 6 additional months to be added onto his sentence, and he was once again sent to the punishment block when he and he was injected with sedatives and antipsychotic medications to kind of keep him calm.
Wow.
Michael continued to be a violent prisoner and was put in and out of solitary confinement for months, and his wife filed for divorce, unable to, like, she just didn't want to wait for him to get out of prison because he kept increasing his time in jail.
Yeah.
Which I don't blame her.
She shouldn't have married that dude anyway. She was like, his accent.
She just like saw him and was like, yeah, this looks like a good idea. Michael continued to be a violent prisoner and was put in and out of solitary confinement for months. And then his wife divorced him, and she just couldn't wait for him. And after that, he attacked yet another prisoner with a broken glass jug and added an additional 9 months to his sentence. So he started to get this reputation as a very dangerous inmate, and that was starting to get around. So whenever he'd be moved between prisons, that would follow him. So they would chain him to the floor of the prison vans when they moved him around. They kept him in isolation. And since there wasn't very much to do in prison, he just got very, very into fitness. And he would just always be attacking inmates and damaging prison property. At one point, he even tried to poison the inmate in the cell next to him, causing him to be moved to Parkhurst Prison in 1976 at the age of 24 and befriending the Cray twins. So Michael felt that these two guys were, quote, the best two guys he had ever met, quote. The Cray twins had been a part of organized crime gang called The Firm. The Xboxers ran their gang out of nightclubs and pubs that they owned, and they were considered celebrities who had interviews with the media and were friends with people like Frank Sinatra, Diana Dors, Judy Garland, and various politicians. So they were like your stereotypical mob bosses.
Nice.
And they looked
the best guys I've ever met.
Yeah. So having friends like these did not help his title as a dangerous prisoner, so he was transferred yet again after he threatened to kill a guard and spent 4 more months in isolation. The reason he was put in 4 months of isolation was because they found him trying to dig out of his cell and escape, which is not an uncommon thing for him, as we will see going on. When he got out of isolation, he hunted down the inmate who had snitched on him that he was trying to escape and proceeded to attack him and scar him for life.
Jesus.
Wow.
Yeah.
So he was trying to dig out of his cell?
Yeah, he was like trying to like just
with his superhuman strength.
Yeah.
So crazy. He thinks he's like an animal.
Pretty much.
He kind of seems like an animal.
You'll see, he makes some interesting comments later on that we'll get into. The prison once again wanted to transfer him out, but the only place that would now accept him was a psychiatric ward in another prison, which is where he attacked a guard, attacked a man with a jam jar, and attempted suicide. His actions escalated until he was finally transferred to Rapton Secure Hospital, which is a high-security psychiatric hospital. He absolutely hated the daily doses of medication that they wanted to give him, and it was something he couldn't adjust to, and he was aggravated by the need and the fact that he was surrounded by so many violently mentally ill patients got under his skin because he felt like he didn't belong there, which is
questionable. I wonder
why. He even tried to strangle a man named John White, who was a murderer pedophile, which I can't exactly fault him for.
Yeah.
Yeah, he just, like, found out what this guy was there for, and he was like, well, you gotta fucking die.
That's, like, not uncommon, though, in prisons.
So Mike will be quoted later speaking about the horrors he saw at the hospitals that made it impossible for him to stay there, that people would harm themselves, and what people would do to themselves due to their mental illness was engraved in his mind. He was returned back to prison where he met up with one of the Cray twins, and Michael had fallen into a depression after he failed to kill another inmate when the silk tie he was using to strangle this person ripped from the force he was using on it.
Jesus.
Because he's a big fucking man. The Cray twin tried to lift his spirits by inviting a pro boxer to the prison to meet him. Because that's just the power this man wields. The one thing Michael was well known for were his rooftop riots at the prisons. In 1982, he escaped from the roof to the roof of the prison, where he ripped off the roof tiles, and the second time he did it, he was on the rooftop for 3 days and needed to be talked down by his family, but not before he caused 250,000 pounds of damage to the prison, which is the equivalent of $304,000.
So awesome. Fucking rager.
He continued to receive treatment at the prison and took up art. He even began to win awards in the prison for his cartoons and writing skills. He continued he conducted a third rooftop protest demanding to transfer prisons when he was finally talked down by his family members again. It was not until a 18-day hunger strike did he finally get what he wanted and was transferred to another high-security psychiatric facility, which pissed him off because he's like, I wanted to go to another prison, not another hospital. So he fucked shit up there, too.
Yeah, I'm like, he stages another mutiny, another riot.
Yep. Like, he's like, let me just throw as many fucking riots as I can. And he does. I think he holds one of the records for, like, most rooftop riots.
That's a weird record to have.
Yeah. All of his titles are fucking weird. So, because
he's so hardcore.
Yeah, he really is. And if you look him up, I'm sorry to say this if he ever hears this, but he looks like Eggman from Sonic.
Oh my god.
Like,
is he still alive?
Oh yes, he's still alive. What? He's very much still alive. I will tell you his name now later on so you can look him up, because he doesn't go by Michael, and we'll get into that. But because he's now in a hospital, doctors were trying to diagnose him and try and figure out what's going on with him, but they couldn't determine one, but they were discussing possibilities of him having schizophrenia or a psychopathy. I don't know how I feel about those, because they don't talk too much about his mental health during any of this, just his violent outbursts. So, well, I don't know how I feel about that.
The only thing that I could see there, like, with psychopathy is, like, the no remorse, like, no thought of, like, violent conduct, you know, like, it is what it is. That's the only thing that fits, though, in my head. Like, schizophrenia, like, he's not fucking delusional. He's not hallucinating. That doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Unless, like, there's stuff we don't know, which is, could be.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, there's some stuff later on that he does talk about with later riots that I can see maybe fitting in. But this is all well after this point, so I don't know what they're using to try and diagnose him with these things, but I just thought that was interesting. He did start to improve a little bit while he was at this facility, but he soon returned to his usual ways when a patient made a sexual advance at him, so he proceeded to stab him with a sauce bottle. Just because.
A broken sauce bottle?
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering.
They don't specify, so I can't tell you.
Do you imagine the rage you have to have to do that without it being broken?
Right.
I don't know, dude. I don't know.
He is superhuman, so
attacking. He is, but. Attacking someone with a sauce bottle lands you an additional 3 years in jail.
Of course. Just so we all know.
Yeah, just so y'all know, so don't attack people with a sauce bottle. You get 3 years in jail, at least in England. But after this attack, he was just sent back into the general prison population. They didn't keep him anywhere. They were just like, okay, go back.
See, that's my question. If, like, his conduct's always like this, like, in the U.S., we're like, okay, solitary.
You know? We'll get there. We'll get there.
Oh, okay.
This is
not that I agree with solitary confinement, but
no, this is still what we do. Like, believe it or not, this is still early in his time in jail.
Jesus.
So yeah, there's still quite a bit that's gonna happen. When he was sent back to the general population, he just decided, let's have another 3-day rooftop protest. He caused another 100,000 pounds of damage, and added an additional year to his sentence. And he had been transferred 8 more times and spent the rest of his sentence in isolation before he was released in 1986.
Okay.
Almost immediately upon his release, he went and bought a water gun, modified it to look real, and used it to intimidate someone to drive him back to his hometown. So he just held a fucker hostage.
He's like, take me home. Yeah,
pretty much. Don't mind the fact that this gun is full of water. Take me the fuck home. He began a career in illegal bare-knuckle boxing for a period of time, and at the recommendation of, he did so at the recommendation of one of the Kray twins, who are just now his best buds, I guess. And he changed his name.
It sounds on brand.
Yeah. He changed his name to Charles Bronson, which is what he is referred to now in
Bronson.
Yeah, that's what you'll find him now under in any newspapers, or if you look him up, it will always be under Charles Bronson. He changed his name at the recommendation of his manager, his fighting manager.
Oh, I was like, he gets a manager for being a fucking criminal?
Yeah, pretty much. and he changed his name after the American actor, Charles Bronson. So... Oh. I don't know why, but he just did.
That makes sense, because I was about to say, that name sounds familiar.
Yeah, there's an actor, and then there's this guy. So he wanted to take on lots of big names in the fighting world, and has claimed to even kill a Rottweiler with his bare hands in a 10,000-pound underground fighting ring. But he says
this is something...
I don't know. I don't know why underground fighting rings do this shit, but he said it was something he regretted because he loved animals. But it's $10,000, so I guess. Or 10,000 pounds, I guess.
Well, I guess.
I guess. But he killed a dog with his bare hands.
Fucking terrifying.
Yeah. In 1988, he surprised his girlfriend at the time named Allison by robbing a jewelry store on New Year's Day, selling all the jewelry, and keeping a single ring for her. Several days later, he was arrested after being free for just 69 days and was charged under his fighting name, Charles Bronson. So he gave up his birth name entirely.
Wow.
Yeah. At first, witnesses were afraid to testify against him, but soon his girlfriend became the main witness for the prosecutors, and he was sentenced to another 7 years in prison. Because of all of his previous antics, prisons refused to take him.
Seriously?
Yeah. So he was constantly being moved, and during one of his stints where he spent a month... I guess he spent a month in like a more of like a hospital prison. He bonded to a family of rats in his cell just because he could. Like, he's getting progressively weirder.
What the fuck?
There was a time where he was in a different prison and he seemed to be getting comfortable when all of a sudden he just apparently like snapped. And led a riot naked while wielding a spear made out of a broom handle and a broken bottle.
All right. Well, those things I said about his mental health, maybe.
Maybe we should reevaluate them.
Yeah.
In another prison, he was attacked by two inmates and stabbed in the back repeatedly, but he refused to tell officers about who had attacked him. But he went on to heal completely fine and was released from prison once more in 1992 for 53 days before he was arrested for conspiracy to rob. But he swore that the conspiracy was made up, and his girlfriend and her friends created this theory to have him arrested. The charges were dismissed. And he only was fined £600 for breaking his girlfriend's lover's nose upon release for being a part of this plot. 16 days later, he was arrested again for conspiracy to rob and possession of a sawed-off shotgun. While waiting for the trial, he took a librarian hostage and demanded a helicopter, a blow-up sex doll, and a cup of tea from the police. I don't know.
These are my demands.
These are my demands.
It's a weird dude.
Yeah, when he finally went on trial, his charges... when he went on trial for his charges, he pled not guilty for conspiracy to rob, but guilty of owning the shotgun. But he wanted to clarify that he didn't have it to harm anyone. He had it to commit suicide. The court changed the charges on the case from conspiracy to rob to intent to rob, and in order to give him another 8 years in prison. Which kind of seems fucked to me.
Spending the rest of his fucking life in prison.
Pretty much. But we kind of find out later on that that's his entire goal. Is he's just like, fuck it, might as well just spend my life in prison.
I mean, I guess. If it's what you know, yeah. You know.
I mean, that brings up a whole question about the prison pipeline. And like, we repeatedly just send the same people back to prison over and over.
Yeah, and institutionalization and how we don't rehabilitate people and... We just put them somewhere to sit.
Yep.
Sorry.
Yeah. And it's like we don't ever rehabilitate people for like exiting. It's like when you don't prepare people to leave the military and go back into civilian life. It's like when you release somebody from prison, you don't get them ready to go back into civilian life. You just like...
That doesn't even like...
Go.
Yeah.
And be normal and be fine. It's like, no, you literally kept them in a cage for X amount of years. You're not preparing them to come back to all of this. And more likely, you're releasing them into a place where they have no money, they don't have a place to go, and you're just expecting them to be an upright citizen after that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
well,
I have feelings.
And when you bring up the pipeline, too, like, if we just send kids there, and then that's all they know, and then we don't give them any skills... or training or anything to do better, then how can we expect them to do better?
Yep. Exactly. But like, this guy has been in jail since he was like, he's been with the like dealing with the law since he was a teenager, and he's been in prison since his 20s. So like,
wow.
This is all he knows at this point. So after he's given another 8 years in prison, he spends 40 days in isolation naked. When he is transferred to another place, he kept this place that he gets transferred to. It is referred to by the media and by the prison itself as the Hannibal Cage. It was created for a serial killer named Robert Maudsley that I might talk about in a later episode.
Cool.
This was created a few years earlier, and it was a 5.5 by 4.5 meter large cell with bulletproof windows through which the prisoners could be observed. The cell was furnished with a table and chair made out of compressed cardboard, and the bed was a concrete slab. To enter the cell, there was a solid steel door into a metal cage within the cell that was surrounded by a thick acrylic wall, and only had a small slot at the bottom for food to be passed to the prisoner. So like if you literally imagine in Silence of the Lambs that like box he's kept in, that's literally what they designed this after.
Whoa. That's fucking that's cool. So
crazy. Yeah.
While in this hell box, guards encouraged him to continue practicing his art and cartooning, but he was being moved to prisons almost weekly, and he remained in isolation in each and every prison that he went to, starting from 1994, when his father died, to April 1996. At this point, he, quote, loses it badly, when a prisoner who was an Iraqi hijacker bumped into him in the cafeteria and didn't apologize. So because of that, he took two other hijackers and an unrelated prisoner hostage. And he, like, I think he kept them hostage in his cell, and he kept ranting about his dead father and that the should the guards or hostages try anything, he would be, quote, snapping necks. He demanded a plane to Libya, two submachine guns, 5,000 rounds, and an axe, and he threatened to eat one of the hostages if his demands weren't met. He began to spiral. Yeah. I think it was also he asked for, like, a cupcake or something. I only found a few accounts of that. Also a cake. I mean, why not? He asked for a blow-up doll in the last one, so, like, not off-brand. He began to spiral and made the prisoners sing for him, and he had the hijackers tickle his feet and call him General before releasing the unrelated prisoner and chanting that he wanted ice cream to the guards. He's fucking weird, dude. He then hit one of the hijackers with a metal food tray, but felt guilty about it, so he asked the prisoner to hit him back with the tray 5 times. And when the man refused, Charles cut his shoulder 6 times with a safety razor and let the prisoners go, earning him an additional 5 years to his sentence.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's like, beat me with this. You won't? Cool. Gonna cut you up now.
What? Oh, he cut himself.
He's like, I feel bad for cutting you. Can you cut me? No. Okay, I'm gonna cut myself.
Oh yeah, my it was God. Pretty much like he hit the prisoner. The prisoner was like, because this is a big fucking dude. He's already holding you hostage and then telling you to beat him up back. And when he doesn't, he's like, he just starts self-harming.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So, yeah, he got an additional 5 years to a sentence, and this began his, like, really big spiral downwards. He held two other hostages. There was a doctor in 1996 who came in the place of a lawyer for him, and there's not really too much information about, like, what happened during that hostage situation, but in 1999, there was a teacher at the prison who criticized some art that he made, and there was a little bit of clarification that he was making fun of his art that was about AIDS. So I'm kind of like, get fucked.
Yeah.
So during this hostage situation, he tied the teacher up with a leather jump rope and dragged him around for 44 hours like a dog as he tore apart the prison. He literally, with his bare fucking hands, ripped a refrigeration unit out of the wall. Through it, he was destroying furniture. He had two knives and attempted during the siege to harm himself multiple times with them. But he was finally tased and sedated when he was yanking a washing machine full of water out of a wall in an attempt to electrocute himself.
Okay.
This is a big fucking dude. Like,
it seems like they don't have any way of stopping him.
Like, I don't know how to emphasize the fact he literally was just like, let me just rip this machine out of a fucking wall. During trial for this incident, the judge commended Charles for behaving really well during court, but felt, quote, he was dangerous and unpredictable, especially when he was upset and angry. Although nobody knows what was in his mind, his victims have all the same fears that their lives are about to be ended, end quote. He felt that the community needed to be protected from Charles, and while it's not determined if he had a mental illness, there was some sort of ongoing problem. Charles defended himself to the jury since he no longer trusted the judicial system. Surprise. He told them that he felt dehumanized during his time in prison, and that he felt like he no longer knew how to interact with people, and that anytime that he came in contact with people, he would have panic attacks. He is quoted saying, I suffer with what you call post-traumatic stress disorder. I am a messed up person. The years of isolation changed Charles. And here's a little bit of a longer excerpt from him. Quote, my eyes are bad due to the years of unnatural light I've had. My vision is terrible. I have to wear shaded glasses to read. Years of isolation have left me unable to face the light for more than a few minutes. It gives me terrible headaches if I do. Years of loneliness in small cells have left me paranoid about people invading my space. I now can't stand people getting too close, crowding me. I hate people breathing on me, and I hate smelly bodies coming near me. Mouths to me are simply for eating, never for kissing. A man needs a routine to cope with such extreme situations. For me, it is my push-ups and sit-ups. I also pace the room and count each step. Some prisoners I know lay down on their beds for 3 hours on their left side, 3 hours on their right, and three on their back. He told the jury about the Hannibal cell and that he was not living, just simply existing in this room for 23 to 24 hours a day. It was like living in a sewer and like living in hell. He even specifically mentions that he would like wake up sometimes with like a really bad headache, and he would have to go over to the really small window that was in this cell and like put his lips up to the window to try and get some fresh air to make the headaches go away. So, it's a little fucked.
There's something about solitary that's always been, like, a little weird to me. You know? Like, just something about putting someone in a box alone.
Well, it's
for such a long time.
Yeah, it's gonna make anyone go a little...
What he said was like, so sad. What he said was, like, so depressing and, like... Yeah, he did all these crazy things, but just like, damn, he never really got a chance to live differently, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, this is literally, he's been in and out of isolation his whole life. And I'll get into like exact numbers of how long he's been in isolation towards the end here. So during his trial, he was guarded constantly by six different guards. And at the age of 47, he was given a life sentence for this incident, and the prison built a specific unit to handle him and reduce the chances of him hurting other prisoners and staff. This unit was referred to as Britain's Alcatraz and was used to house two serial killers in addition to Charles, who had now been known as a dangerous hostage taker, and he could bend doors and bars of cells with his bare hands. So,
Jesus.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
By 2000, Charles had been held at almost 150 prisons and spent only 3 months of his adult life free. He was making efforts. God. Yeah. Like, that is the part that... Yeah, that's the part that really hit me. I was like, 3 whole months of your adult life you've been free. That's it.
Wow.
He started making efforts to change and had been involved in anti-crime projects, as well as using his art to fundraise for animal shelters, which causes art to be published in newspaper and magazines. He even wrote to a museum once saying, quote, "Men like me are born to be in cages. Leave animals and birds alone, or I'll rip your heads clear off your shoulders."
Whoa, that is so awesome. Yeah. Like, perspective.
Those who knew him and helped him publish his book feel that Charles is not a monster, but rather someone suffering from violent mental illness, and that he is not ready to be released and won't be for quite some time.
Jesus Christ.
But they do feel like he needs medical attention rather than being locked up in the prison system. The mixture of violence and the possibility of there being a mental illness presence earns him the rank of Britain's most notorious prisoners and one of Britain's most notorious hostage takers and one of England's most dangerous prisoners, a title he is proud of and wants to uphold. He feels he is a fitness fanatic and has written a book on how to work out in solitary places, which is a very tempting read given our quarantine situation.
Honestly.
Yeah. So he describes his workout regimen that he... Yeah, I'll actually probably link it on our the namnab.com. So that way y'all can read it. It's fully available. But it's like how to use like body weight exercises and stuff. But he describes a workout regimen that he created in 2008 that he claimed to do 172 press-ups in 60 seconds, and that he has also written other books on his life in prison and the various dangerous criminals that he had come in contact with. In 2013, there was a petition for Charles Charles's release that had 10,000 signatures on it, and it was sent to the Prime Minister along with a note from Charles stating that he wanted to live what was left of his life and not be buried in the prison system, but the petition went ignored. In 2014, he changed his name again to Charles Salvador in honor of his favorite artist, Salvador Dali, and created his foundation to promote the auction of his own art as well as make the arts accessible to more people. He wanted to renounce being violent, and even though he has never killed anyone, he spent most of his life in prison and felt by getting rid of things he had created as Charles Bronson, he would be killing off his old self. In 2016, he created a series of art and poems for auction to raise money for a children's for the treatment of a child who had cerebral palsy. As of 2020, 67-year-old Charles Bronson is still in prison and has been married 3 times over the years. He has been in prison for over 44 years with 36 of those years in solitary confinement. He continues to have violent outbursts, and he feels like these happen in moments where he loses himself and that he has no intention to be violent, but he cannot stop himself from attacking others, and he feels like he blacks out in these moments. There was actually a movie based on his life called Bronson, where Charles is actually played by Tom Hardy. So I thought that was interesting.
I've seen that. That's like literally like I was thinking this whole time, like this sounds like a movie I've watched. Yeah. And it turns out it fucking is. That's hilarious. I was like, why does it sound so familiar? It's fucking cool.
Yeah, this whole case is one that my partner actually found for me. Because he was like, did you know Tom Hardy went in and interviewed this guy? And when he told him that he was going to play him, Bronson was like, you're not muscular enough to play me. And so Tom Hardy was just like, went and just got ripped and then came back. And then Bronson was like, okay, you can play me now.
Ooh, hot.
So
I love Tom Hardy.
Me too. But yeah, that is Charles Bronson. He is England's most violent prisoner. And he, like, oddly enough, like, he's in that Britain's Alcatraz with 2 serial killers. And this man, who is England's most violent prisoner, has never killed anyone.
Wow.
Like, so never committed murder. Or at least known murder.
Right.
So, I just thought that was fascinating. That he's just, like, he just takes hostages, fucks shit up, and hasn't really actually done anything to anyone.
Damn.
He has fuck out of a lot of people, though.
Yeah. He has done that, yeah.
He did fuck up some people, yeah.
36 years in confinement, though.
Yep.
Wow.
Like, people can't even stay home for a month. 36 years in solitary confinement.
Yep. Well, and it was kind of interesting because if you look him up, you actually find him in relation to one of his wives who was really famous, which I thought the whole situation was kind of strange because his wife was an actress for like a really famous show in England. And then it came up that she had died of, I think they were saying, a cocaine overdose. But they kept trying to be like, you know, she may have just married him for the attention or something. And then Charles found out that she cheated on him because there was pictures circulating of like her getting motorboated by some soldier. That really like fucked shit up.
Specifically motorboat?
Yeah, specifically. Like, if you look it up, all the headlines are like, what is this motorboating thing? And it's like, oh my god, I can't believe that this is happening right now. But yeah, when you look him up, A, he looks like Eggman. B, you find a bunch of stuff about one of his wives that died from an overdose, who was an actress, which is kind of interesting. And then a lot of articles about, like, why do women fall in love with people who are, like, dangerous criminals in jail that I was not even going to spiral into because I was like, that's a whole other episode and bag of...
Yeah, that could be its own thing.
I can't get into right now. It's a can of worms I'm not ready to unpack. But, yeah, that is the dangerous prisoner for y'all.
Yay. Very it's so cool. Interesting.
I've never heard that story before. Besides watching it and not realizing that it was real.
It's kind of a weird one because I was like,
it's really fucking weird.
It's just, it's not what you expect.
Not at all. Well, if you want to go see this egghead-looking criminal man, go check out our Instagram. Yes. Not a Boogeyman.
And if you want to find out more information on his book, go to our website, NamNeb, which is linked in our Instagram. Yep. We also have the blog for this boy on there.
Perfect. And we will see you guys next week.
Yes. See ya.
Bye.
Bye.